Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to Fitzdare's World of Sport in association with our new sponsors, Boodles. Check them out at boodles.com. It's episode 6. Doesn't time fly? Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Adrian Clark, and alongside me in the studio today are the dynamic double act, Lola Katz-Roberts and Henry Beasley. Plus, and I am excited about this, the renowned football data expert, Ted Knutson. Coming up on today's pod.
Cutting it back for Delap! 2-0! Liam Delap on target again!
With data and stats on our mind, we discuss a big summer for a number of Premier League clubs.
A flex player is one that can play multiple positions. Marina wasn't expected to do so. That was kind of a desperate thing. But Arsenal just don't have a traditional number nine. Maybe they want one and they go for somebody like Liam Delap at the right price, knowing that even if he washes out, they can resell him next year and not cost them anything.
And ahead of a jam-packed weekend of sport, we'll also put our necks on the line with some ideas on what to back.
So I'm going for a double with Field of Gold running in the Irish Guineas this weekend, and I'm throwing in Los Angeles in a double in the 305 Tattersalls Gold Cup, and that comes out at odds of 3.3-1.
Yep, stick with us. We have a very insightful show that lies ahead. If you're over 18 and love your sport like we do, then well done. You've landed in exactly the right place. If you also have an interest in sports betting, this could well be the podcast for you. Our mantra is very, very simple. Never gamble more than you can shrug off losing if you accidentally put your wallet in the washing machine. Remember, 18 plus, please bet responsibly. And remember, gambleaware.org. Lola, Henry, welcome back. And I'm delighted to welcome the founder of StatsBomb and the man responsible for the Transfer Flow, your must-have daily newsletter this summer to keep you in the know. It is Ted Knutson. Hello, Ted. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for welcoming me.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant to have you with us. I'm really, really looking forward to getting stuck in. I know that you are in particular, Lola.
I'm starstruck.
Just before we kicked off, you asked a very interesting question, and I kind of want you to repeat it, if you don't mind, in regards to Trent Alexander-Arnold, because listeners to last week's show will know that we kind of got off on not the wrong foot, but a slightly awkward one when you had a pop at me over my thoughts on Liverpool fans booing Trent Alexander-Arnold. So far away.
Yeah, well, we're still here. So nothing bad happened, nothing untoward during the week. But yeah, I asked Ted, what do you think Trent's transfer value would have been if he had 2 or 3 years left on his contract? And Ted, you said?
I said 75, 80 million, probably somewhere in that range, which is very high for a right back, but he's unique in his profile.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what he's cost us. Disgraceful.
It cost you nothing though, Lola. Remember that.
Came from nothing, went back to nothing.
What does make him unique then, Trent Alexander-Arnold?
His ability to pass out of the right back role, and especially to be able to quarterback in those long switches, like quite unusual across a lot of football. His ability to do early crosses, which results into like outstanding goals for the Liverpool forwards as well. It'll be intriguing to see how he fits into that Real Madrid system.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's two players rolled into one, isn't he? Is he going to suit the big players at Real Madrid, like an Mbappe or a Vinicius?
I think he'll be fine with that. The question is whether Madrid's current players suit Real Madrid. I think that they have a lot of turnover that happens this summer. They also need to get younger. Their injuries across the back line were particularly problematic, which is one reason why they're looking at a different Premier League player, a young centre back out of Bournemouth.
Yeah, he's a good player, isn't he? Dean Huijsen.
Didn't have his best night last night.
He didn't. But look, I think that's understandable. If you're just about to make a move to Real Madrid, if your mind's not on the game, I think you can be forgiven. Look, it's not this weekend, the Champions League final, but Let's have a quick look ahead to it, shall we? PSG against Inter Milan. It is fourth, plays 15th from the league phase, which is interesting, I think, in itself. And the team that did finish 15th in that league phase are the favourites, PSG 5-4. Inter are 11-5 shots with a draw after 90 minutes at 23-10. I've got to ask you, Ted, about this rebuild, this remodelling of PSG that Enrique has taken on. It seems to have worked quite spectacularly.
Early in the season when they played Arsenal, they looked like children. Mm-hmm. They got shrugged off physically. Arsenal were not their most dominant, but it seemed like PSG could not contain them and they couldn't keep up with them over the full course of the match. As you came back out of the other side of the winter break and you saw like a very small adjustment in the transfer window, but also a lot of time that Enrique had spent sort of drilling these guys into what they needed to do. He suspended Dembele early in the season because of disciplinary issues. He wanted him to be a leader and somebody that everyone could respect because he knew he was the best player. Coming back out the other side, when we went back into the group stage, like, wow, this doesn't look like the same team. They look functionally much more lethal in attack, also able to defend much better than, say, the best team that looked like they were in the Champions League, which is Barcelona, who at the end could not defend against pretty much anybody. and it took them a long time to get there, but they finally got to basically end up being almost favorites as you looked at their progression through the space.
I just feel like they've got the blend right, haven't they, in that squad. They've got a really nice combination of youth, but also the experience in there with Hakimi, Marquinhos, the keeper Donnarumma as well. The balance just seems right in that squad.
They're very brilliant young. Manager. They're very young. I think they've come close to recording. They certainly fielded the youngest starting 11 for many, many years in the competition on average. Is that the way we're moving at the highest level of European football, or does it depend? See how good these young players are. You know, are other clubs going to follow suit is what I'm asking.
Chelsea tried to follow suit to very mixed results. They picked up some pretty good players. But the one thing that PSG have in spades is they have the best catchment area for their academy in the world. They put a lot of money into that academy. And then they are also able to pick up the best French players, which, you know, as we know, is one of the top four nations consistently in football. And so that combination makes them pretty unique. Like, the only other place that looks like that is the Real Madrid Academy and their ability to take their best players from Madrid and locally and then produce consistent flights of Champions League winners.
Okay, very quickly on Inter Milan, they're the outsiders here. Do you think that that's correct?
They've been the outsiders the entire time. I got on them at 10.75 for the outright.
10.75?
Yeah, okay. That was like four rounds ago. I was like, this just feels undervalued. They feel like they're a tough team to play against. They are the counterpoint to the youth, right? A lot of older players, they came through that extra time with unexpected goals and managed to grind out the young, flashy players from Barcelona.
Okay, this weekend at Wembley Stadium, we're going to see the Championship playoff final, Sheffield United against Sunderland for the right to be in a relegation scrap in next season's Premier League. Look, Leeds and Burnley have gone up already, Ted. They're at the front of the betting in terms of the teams that are going to come straight back down, as will the playoff winners be. Is there a secret, in your opinion, to survival in the Premier League? Because I know that you spent some time working at Brentford en route to the top flight.
I think these days it's harder than ever, but one of the challenges that some of these teams had was, one, their recruitment was not very good. Like, you look at a Leicester, their recruitment was challenging. I think that Southampton, for some reason, their coach did not necessarily suit their recruitment, and that was a huge mismatch early in the season. The one that was most intriguing is Ipswich, who seemed to have the best coach coming out of it, but most of their players were from League One. And there's a point at which, like, you just run out of gas in terms of the talent versus the disparity there. So you have to be really careful in spending for potential if you yo-yo, while also trying to find just enough to stay up. If someone were to have someone like Sean Dyche, that might be somebody that gets hired to keep somebody in that league.
Yeah. Do you need to change your style? Is a key question.
Absolutely.
For me. Because any team that comes up, or most of the teams that come up, especially Leeds, great attack, have lots of the ball. It's not going to be the same in the Premier League. That much is obvious. You've got to think about your off the ball work more so maybe than what you do with the ball, right? I mean,
you can't dominate in the way that these teams have been. Mm-hmm. I had Leeds preseason to go up and to win the league, and so I was pretty happy with that one to come through. Had a really good run through the Championship betting on my newsletter this year. But when you get up to that Premier League level, these players are so used to having all the ball. And then when you have 40% of it, like, he's just so much less ability to be useful with it.
I just want to ask about Ipswich. Do you think we're getting to a situation where teams are kind of planning to come up and go down again, use the parachute payments and try and assemble a strong squad for the Championship? With Ipswich, they didn't go after proven Premier League talent. They signed Jack Clarke, who'd been very good at Sunderland, Delap, who'd had a decent loan spell at Hull but hadn't pulled up any trees.
Hutchinson as well.
Hutchinson, yeah, who'd done very well. But young players who've got the profile to succeed in the Championship. Do you think there was kind of advanced planning going on where they knew they were probably going to go down?
Absolutely. I think that's the most prudent way that most of these teams will go about it now. That doesn't mean that all of them will. Some owners will happily spunk a bunch of money and, mm-hmm. and hope that they can get up there and stay. Sometimes that's ruinous. It might still work these days. We don't know. But, you know, who would have predicted the teams that are in 16th and 17th in the Premier League this year?
And what sort of profile should Leeds, Burnley and, you know, one of the playoff winners be looking to bring in then this summer? And obviously there's no stat associated with Premier League experience, but what value would you put on players that have actually been in the division before?
None.
Really? Yeah.
I look at what we've done across the teams that we've advised. Like, okay. It's always overrated.
Is it?
So you need to be really careful about having enough players to fill your homegrown quota. But for the most part, when you want players that have been successful in comparable leagues and physically successful as well, that's the danger. So understanding the league, fine. And there's less risk in saying that somebody can physically adapt to the Premier League, which is very intense. But otherwise, it's not something that you want to pay for.
Yeah, I just very briefly, Ted, as well, wanted to ask you about Burnley. So we're talking about styles of play. They've obviously proven over the past season incredible defensively. Only conceded 16 goals, didn't they, I think, throughout the whole season. Can that translate to the Premier League? Because the sort of simple answer is, it's okay doing that in the Championship, but when you're coming up against Haaland, Isak, whoever Arsenal might sign. Yeah, Salah, of course, yeah. It's going to be more difficult. So how do you think that's going to translate to the Premier League for them?
In a stats perspective, it's one of the biggest overperformances we've ever seen defensively.
Wow. Really?
Leeds obviously had a problem at goalkeeper, and that sort of leaked a bunch of goals for them. But Leeds were definitely the best defensive team in terms of the underlying stats, which tend to be predictive of the next season as well. So you would expect Burnley will regress somewhat.
Yeah.
They'll also be facing much tougher competition, and possibly they might lose their goalkeeper to a much bigger fish, which is a driving factor there as well. Sure. I think that they will find it very challenging. Leeds are the one team that you look at and say they might have a different plan going into the season because their ownership looks to spend more money. They just raised more money from a share issue. So you might see like some sexy transfers up there.
Okay. Just before we move on, very quickly, the issue I have is that I don't see a car crash club in the Premier League that's going to be drawn back down next season. Everyone seems to be better run these days. How do you foresee that? If you're going to pick out a team that might struggle next season, who would it be?
I haven't done the research yet. Okay. I think you're right, though. Mm-hmm. I think the finding the car crash club is much more difficult. And also the fact that all the teams, for the most part, have some level of stats-based recruitment means that they have fewer dramatic failures or they don't allow themselves to get as old as they used to. Yeah. Both Fulham and Crystal Palace have been rejigging quite old squads that they had 3 years ago into something that's a little more modern and able to compete.
Interesting. By the way, for that Championship playoff final, Sheffield United are the favourites, 11-8, Sunderland 9-4. And the draw after 90 minutes is 2-1.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst, so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Right, let's talk Arsenal. I've been waiting for this section. Look, Isak versus Gyökeres versus Sesko. Who should Arsenal go for? Come on, Ted.
No, I think it's more fun if you guys tell me. Okay. And then I get to play the
next. Yeah, Clarky, who do you want? Yeah, who do you
want?
I know who I want, but I tell you. Isak is the one that I want, but he's 1-4 on to stay at Newcastle this summer. So I don't see it really as a particularly viable option. He's more likely, according to the bookmakers, to go to Liverpool, which is interesting. I would prefer to go with Gyökeres over Sesko for the now, because I think he is the goal muncher that Arsenal need. I think he's that guy when Saka flashes those balls across the box and when nobody's in there, he could be the guy attacking the space inside the box to finish. He's very, very good at that. And he's also got that power that Arsenal lack a little bit of at times. They need a physical presence because of Havertz. That suits the style of play. But Havertz isn't explosive, and I think that Gyökeres brings a layer of that. Sesko, for me, is maybe a little bit of a risk. So, what do you think about Gyökeres?
I think his agent does a great job of keeping his name in the media.
Okay.
How good was he in the Championship?
He was good. I saw a lot of
him. Was he good enough to play Arsenal?
I wouldn't have said so.
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't have said so. So you're saying that scoring a bundle of goals in the Portuguese league makes this a bit risky?
Look at Darwin Núñez.
Yeah, there's some risk there. I actually like Darwin. I think Darwin's like fun and good enough to play like reasonably high level. But
that's
yeah.
a hot take, Lola. For
He's
you,
absolutely burned my head out.
No positive things to say about Darwin Núñez over the last 2 years.
The XG differential with him, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's insane.
But that's a recent thing. He doesn't have that historically. Different players, as we know, one that's going to Man United, have the other side of it. Like variance exists in finishing. Chelsea, unfortunately, seem to be a black hole of variance for their center forwards, but everybody else mostly seems to season on season have some level overperformance, some level under.
Gyökeres has scored goals in the Champions League though, hasn't he? So does that not count for anything?
Did you see how bad some of those Champions League teams were?
I was going to say there were some poor teams in there this year, weren't there?
My point on this is more
Arsenal got to the semis.
The bottom of the Portuguese league and even like the middle tier is not great. No. And so if you're able to farm a bunch of goals there, like there's risk involved. Mm. Now, the whole thing that you have to do when doing recruitment for these big clubs is control the amount of money you spend based off the risk that you're taking on board. Mm. That's one thing that Liverpool have historically done a great job, minus a bit of time when Klopp's crew was running over the couple of years. And it's something that Arsenal have done a great job as well. So when you look at those three elements that we've talked about, Isak is top price and they don't have the money for it. Gyökeres has like a significant amount of risk involved. Mm. Maybe they either go with a young guy that fits the powerful center forward role, like a Liam Delap that is sort of also on and has a very nice release clause. Or they go with maybe like an Osimhen because they needed somebody and they wanted to spend.
My twin sister is an Arsenal fan, so I get a lot of the Arsenal narrative. And there's a lot of moaning about needing a number nine. And you have Ali McCoist on the commentary saying, oh, Saka's put in an amazing ball. Where is the center forward? I think there's a bit of an obsession with the idea of a number nine. Mm. And actually what Arsenal need to make really is not necessarily, because Havertz does that central role very well. They need cover for him. But what they need is to make a transformational attacking signing. They need to find their Mane and their Salah. Mm. And I actually think that's more likely to come from the Premier League than not, because you need a guy who's done it kind of mid-level in the Premier League and is going to explode at Arsenal. So I want to put a name in the ring. And he's not a wide forward. That's Johan Wiese at Brentford. He's got 19 non-penalty goals, level with Mo Salah, as the most in the Premier League this season. He's turning 29 in September, so he wouldn't be the age profile Arsenal would normally target. But what do you think of kind of a plaster signing like that, someone who's going to come in and score goals straight away and might help Arsenal in the here and now?
I think that's a team and a recruitment group that have done a pretty good job at being practical and filling holes where necessary. So Mikel Merino was a flex player. Wissa actually is a flex player if you look at his history. We scouted him in 2017 for my professional group when we were advising and consulting there. And we were pretty excited by not only his goal scoring potential, but his creativity. When you look at how he plays with Brentford have a very intentional direct style, and they also have a style that's coached into these players, where get the ball into space as quickly as possible, attack and unset defense. That's something that Arsenal have often missed, and they've also had issues with sort of having both sides be able to sort of create and run well. If you added that type of player for the right price, I think that's pretty interesting.
Interesting. What's a flex player?
So yeah, a flex player. A flex player is one that can play multiple positions.
Yeah.
Marina wasn't expected to do so. That was kind of a desperate thing. But Arsenal, just as everybody has been saying, they don't have a traditional number nine. Maybe they want one and they go for somebody like Liam Delap at the right price, knowing that even if he washes out, they can resell him next year and not cost them anything.
Next season title odds. Liverpool right now, 15-8 favourites. Man City 9-4. Arsenal third in, 5-2. How do you think one of the kind of marquee signings up front could impact that market? Let's say Arsenal do sign Liam Delap. Can you see them shortening at all? Or I guess the question is, who do you think it would take for them to maybe knock Liverpool off the top of the market there for next season?
Premier League, right?
I think the market's wrong at the moment. I think City will be the favourites by the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Partly with based off of who they end up signing. I think that Liverpool are very good, but they're in such a big rebuild that people don't know how good they're going to be next year, which means that like big people will be a little more cautious on it. Arsenal actually were outstanding when they had the players, right? When we looked at them, you know, when they weren't getting red cards for really idiotic reasons. So I think Arsenal are probably potentially even second favorites. Now the question is that number nine. And I'll tell you, nobody that's been mentioned so far, and they often keep things pretty close to the vest, is exciting enough to make that move.
Nobody.
Well, Ishak would be, but he's not moving.
So Gyökeres and Sesko, not a market mover, not who you would go for.
Sesko, if they went for him, they would have to be at like a 35 million price, like with some clauses. Like his release clause, no chance. Looking at a Gyökeres at like 65, like I don't think that happens either. I know behind the scenes, you probably know as well that like there was a lot of willingness on Ollie Watkins in January, and they were interested in that. That ship has sailed as well. So I there's nobody out there. They're not bringing that number nine that's world class.
Can I just say, you all love writing off Liverpool. I bet you didn't have Liverpool to win the league at the start of this season.
I had Liverpool at, what was it, 9-1 odds.
At what point did you put that bet on before?
August.
Told you, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Let's just move on.
We're in the presence of genius.
It's a good time to bring up Liverpool, actually, because on your on the transfer flow, you've written about Liverpool's pursuit of Jeremy Frimpong. Does it make sense or not for him to be the guy to come in for Trent Alexander-Arnold?
You kind of have to tilt your head a little bit to the side and squint your eyes, and maybe you can make sense of it. He's not a natural replacement for Trent.
No.
And when we looked at the stats output across almost all of his time at Leverkusen, what we saw was that he's much more of an attacking midfielder in profile. He has elite output from further back, which is quite unusual. Okay. So when you look at it, there are two things suggested. One is that he can be a part-time backup for Salah that they're getting for only 40 million euros release clause. Very, very interesting and super unusual. The second concept is that maybe they're going to play more of a back three and push him very high, or they play like a hybrid where they have a left back that is much more defensive and they allow him to sort of play with Salah at a much higher level than you would see when Trent was around.
That's interesting, because they have been linked heavily with Kerkez, haven't they, on the other side, who's a very attacking left back, isn't he?
So he's attacking, but he also runs a ton. And so if you were looking for a player that could recover regularly and had like the consistent output and stats, that's what you look for.
You brought up Salah there, maybe being a replacement if he's injured or unavailable. What did you make of Liverpool pushing the boat out for Salah and Van Dijk's renewals? Because the general consensus is that it's a good thing that Liverpool had to do it, but these are surely players in decline.
Potentially. You know more about these players and how they take care of themselves and their bodies than anybody else in the world. And when you look at Salah, they know how he's been the entire time there. They probably have faith that the next couple of years he's going to be good. And if they only have 2 years more and they looked at this last year, they're like, you know, we would pay for a bit of that decline because he's been that good. We can't find somebody else.
I'm sure this was the conversation going on with Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes and co. But the cost of replacing Salah, Van Dijk and Trent in one window, you've alluded to the rebuild that Liverpool are going to have to do this summer. How do you replace 30 goals? Or 20, guaranteed 20-odd goals a season. It's going to cost you hundreds of millions.
And one of the five best centre-backs in the world.
The Van Dijk one was probably more important, would you say, than the Van almost?
I don't
see. If it just came down to one, you'd probably have chosen him, right?
Yeah.
I've got to ask you about Kevin De Bruyne. He's going somewhere else. We don't know where yet. Where do you think he would really suit? Is there a location, a destination that you think this team could do with Kevin De Bruyne?
There are Italian teams that would be excited about him. Like often Italy seems to prolong careers because the style is a little less intense. And then there's been lots of chat about him going to the United States for basically 2 years now. The issue that you get with De Bruyne is just whether he can maintain his body fitness. And I think that he's had a lot of fragility that's built up over the years. He's not the same player, but he still managed to produce, you know, amazing passing wherever he's been.
Yeah.
Would De Bruyne, this is definitely, you know, 1+1 doesn't always equal 2, but would De Bruyne be in some ways the perfect replacement for Trent? You know, early crossing into the box from the right hand side, incredible quarterback passing range, can't run, definitely can't defend.
I would say that that's a little harsh on Trent. Like Trent's ability to defend when he's not pushed all the way forward is at least average.
Florian Wirtz is a name that's been linked heavily with Liverpool. You're rubbing your hands together. But not just Liverpool. A number of big clubs are really, really interested in him. I like him. Haven't seen enough in the flesh to sort of have a defined opinion as yet. What do the stats tell us about Florian Wirtz, the data? Is he worth the cash?
One of the two best young attackers that have in Germany, Musiala being the other one. If you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have been 98% he's going to Bayern. But it seems like his team has managed to create a situation where at least they're going to get a bit of a bidding war. Is he worth the price? That's always the question at these top tier. But like the market price is the market price for most of the best players. Like it's just whoever ends up getting him and whether you can create a situation where there are many different entities that are bidding for it. There are some times where we know it's obviously the wrong price. With Wirtz, like at 85 to 90, especially if there's some clauses in there, like it's top tier price for one of the best young talents in one of the better leagues.
I just wonder, Liverpool haven't played with a number 10 traditionally this season. Dominic Szoboszlai has played in that role. Harvey Elliott's found game time very difficult. Would signing Florian Wirtz suggest that Slot is looking to change the structure of how Liverpool attack?
I don't think so. I think the back three concept is a little more compelling, especially given Gravenberch typically dropping into the back line. I don't think a 10 exists in the Premier League for really important reasons tactically right now and the intensity around it. Like you just don't have the space to get those guys on the ball regularly.
I wanted to ask you about Man United as well. They've had a truly awful season, obviously, domestically in particular. They obviously need a real rebuild there. How do they even go about starting that process? We've heard Cunha is very likely to be coming in this summer, but what else do they need to do?
You start the process by not making the same mistakes that you've been making for the last decade plus, which is don't overpay for players that either are not obvious slam dunks or don't overpay for almost anybody, which is what Liverpool have done a great job. Whenever Liverpool make a mistake, they make a mistake in like the 20 to 30 pound range. And they particularly make a mistake in like, oh, it's a 5 million salary. It's not a 10 to 15 million albatross. That means you can never move them to anybody anywhere else in the world. So that's the place where you start. You start with the basics and the framework.
Is Cunha a slam dunk? Because I don't think he is. I don't like his attitude.
I think the attitude is challenging, although we never know as much about the players as we think we
True.
Do, right? So like being
Very
gentle
diplomatic.
On that, being gentle on the attitude. Mm. I think when you look at him, he's not likely to continue performing at the same level based off of his basic levels of shots. Now, some people are like, oh, well, Wolves weren't great and he's done great on a Wolves team. Fine, but he's not going to finish at a Lionel Messi level for the rest of his career, which is what that price looks like.
Oh, right. For me, positionally, he suits it because obviously you've got two attacking midfielders and Cunha, in my opinion, does all of his best work in the left number 10 part of the field. So for me, that is a no-brainer. He fits in there. But you're saying that there's no guarantee that he's going to be able to produce the same output, basically.
Correct. Like, are you paying for what his underlying goals look like, which is about 7 this year from non-penalties, or are you paying for 15? That's a big price differential there. And poor Ugarte in that situation. That dude's got to cover the whole pitch all the time.
This is true. Liam Delap's been linked with them. Is he a big upgrade on Hoyland if he ends up there?
I don't know if it's a big upgrade, but it's a relatively risk-free upgrade.
I did want to ask about that. We've kind of seen recently Man United almost follow the Chelsea route in terms of bringing in players that are 25 or younger on a lower sort of wage structure. Delap obviously fits into that, but we've seen at Chelsea, this is a risk, isn't it? You know, these players are, I mean, Delap's only had one season in the Premier League, largely unproven.
Yeah, on him, what is it about him that makes everybody want him at the moment, Liam Delap? Because is it just the release clause, or is he the real deal?
He doesn't look out of place in the Premier League. He's still very young. He physically seems to be able to dominate some center backs, not all of them, but some of them, still at his age. And usually 25 is kind of the peak age for strikers. He is able to score some goals. And so if you looked at him as this is the price for a backup, forward, then you're like, oh, well, that kind of makes sense. I'm up for that.
That's the question, isn't it? If he's expected to go into Man United and lead the line for a team that essentially is looking to be in the top four at an absolute minimum, that's a big ask of him, isn't it? And I think Hoyland's probably found that this season, hasn't he? The pressure almost of being the main man there. And yeah, he's proved that he's clearly just not quite up to it.
Yeah, on Manchester United, I think we expect them to sign a new goalkeeper. Hopefully I'm not throwing you under the bus here, but are there any goalkeepers out there that really stand out at the moment that could be available for transfer from a data perspective?
Yeah, Joan Garcia is or Joan Garcia is one of the names that comes up. Arsenal almost signed him last summer.
Know. I expected him to be almost nailed on to join Arsenal, but that's not necessarily the case at the minute.
Yeah, I think that they're okay with what they've got. They have others. So the question is, you've only got so much budget, right? Yeah. And I'm not sure why Manchester United would spend on a goalkeeper when they have so many other needs, but that's not my problem. But you know, for a goalkeeper to go for like 30 million euros, which is sort of what that price looked like, you've got to be pretty confident about it. Now, maybe that's right. But now that everybody knows about him, they can get a bidding war out of it as well.
Yeah. Joan Garcia then. Yeah.
Final thing on Man U as well. They're 33-1 to win next season Premier League. Sixth in the market as things stand. Do you think that's fair or probably a bit ambitious? Obviously, things will change over the next couple of months with the transfer window. But I don't think I'd be a backer even at 33-1.
I'm taking them on, do you?
When we talked about it in the podcast that we do at the beginning of last season, I said they were more likely to get relegated than they were to finish in the Champions League. I don't see much that says that it's different. I think they're about league average. They could creep up to like eighth. They could have a lucky run like Nottingham Forest did earlier in the year where they just seemed to be able to eke out one goal wins. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In gambling, you want to bet on probabilities.
Sure.
Yeah.
And across the 38-game season, it's just hard to see them, isn't it?
It's a slow rebuild. Look, interesting times ahead for Manchester United, that's for sure. Tell us about the transfer flow. We got you in here. For anyone that's not yet a subscriber, tell us about it.
So I used to be a professional sports bettor. I worked at one of the big offshore bookies, and then I worked for Brentford for a couple of years, all from a database perspective. And when I came back out of selling my company called StatsBomb, we worked with 300 professional football teams around the world to help them with recruitment. And so I've got a lot of professional space in both the gambling and in the transfer space around how to do this better. We came out and we looked at the media space and we said, you know, it feels like something's missing. And the something missing being people who actually have done this job that aren't just stoking the rumor mills, but will tell you how good this player actually is, whether a team is making a mistake, whether your director of football should be fired, which we have occasionally talked about. And that's the whole process behind it.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Summer transfer sagas then. It's normally Arsenal because they tend to not get these deals done as quick as hoped. Who do you see being the big story in this summer transfer window?
I think the big story is coming out of one team.
Okay.
And I don't know who they're selling, but they have enough players that are of interest that they also won their first cup trophy ever. And they were the big saga last year, really, with Mark Gahey as well. So he's probably going to go because he's only got 1 year left on his contract. Eze looks like he might also potentially go. Wharton is the biggest name in midfield. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen at Palace this year.
Mm. Eberich Eze is one of my favourite players to watch. I don't know whether you guys agree, but I just love watching him. The eye test is brilliant with Eze. Is he someone that you data analysts love as well? Or is there something that hidden there that maybe means his value shouldn't be so high?
We love what he does, which is a lot of ball movement between the thirds. He moves into the final third quite well. He's able to create for his teammates. His goal scoring is probably a little less than you might often wish for. He's been around some pretty good talent the last couple of years. Like Michael Olise has had a great season over at Bayern. It all comes down to price at that point. But I agree with you. He's great to watch. Palace think that they might have his backups already ready to go. And so happy to...
What's he worth then?
Am I buying or am I selling?
It's a good way of dodging it. But yeah, I'd love to see him at Arsenal, I've got to say.
I think he's proven he can do it in big games as well. Yeah. I think he's the first player since 1975 to score in the quarters, semis and final of an FA Cup. And his goal on Saturday was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah, I'd love to see him play more of a role in that England team too. But that's another discussion, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I think he's just tailor-made for our left-hand side there.
Just on transfer value, there were some reports this week about Adam Wharton being valued at 60 million. That feels awfully low considering last summer there was talk about in the hundreds. What do you think of that? How much do you think he's worth?
I think that's low by about 20 million. I think that you'd see him more in the 80 range, largely because he's going to be, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be one of the anchor midfielders of that England midfield for the next decade. And that player has a lot of inherent value.
Right, so looking ahead to next season, Liverpool 15-8 favourites, Manchester City 9-4 with Fitzstairs, Arsenal 5-2, Newcastle next best, your beloved Chelsea, Henry, 20-1 shots to win next season's Premier League.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst, so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Welcome back. If you'd like to place a bet on anything we discuss here, it's pretty easy. Just visit fitstairs.com. Fitstairs also have a new app as well as a telephone and text betting service. If you give them a call, you can get prices on any market, I'm told, as well as special bets. 0207 851 5407 is the number. You can text the office as well, 07492 882 213. And if you quote Boodles, that's the magic word here, you will get an exclusive discretionary price boost. Rest assured, the Fitzstairs brokers will be generous, I'm told. Max one price boost per person must be used at odds of evens or greater. You have to be over 18 and please bet responsibly. Fitzstairs World of Sport is proud to be sponsored by Boodles, the only fine jewellery brand who loves sport just as much as you do. Boodles are great champions of British sport, a natural fit for us. If you're in London, you'll find their flagship store at 178 Bond Street. And check out their website too for some of the most beautiful, stylish jewellery around. That's www.boodles.com. So that was a lot of football, but what's going on elsewhere in the world? This is Fitzstairs World of Sport, of course. So I'm going to ask the guys if there's anything that has caught their eye in terms of what we should be watching this weekend. Lola, let's start with you. What should we keep an eye on?
So I'm going to kick off with the tennis because the French Open gets underway at Roland Garros on Sunday. And I know we've talked a lot about how open the women's competition is this year. And one name I just want to throw into the mix is Mira Andreeva at 6-1. She was a significantly bigger price in December, 14-1. So that has really come in. She made the semifinals in Paris last year. She's fallen to Coco Gauff in the quarterfinals in Madrid and Rome. But there's just the general sense among the people that know things in tennis that she could be a bit of a dark horse. The main draw gets underway on Sunday and you can catch all the action on TNT Sports.
Yeah, she's coached, I think, by Conchita Martinez, a bit of a clay court specialist. I watched one of her games the other day. She's really good, but also quite temperamental.
Yeah, she's very feisty. Young. One other thing that I have to mention is actually the most expensive horse ever sold in Australia is making its debut for Aidan O'Brien this weekend at the Curra. It's called Storm Boy, and it was trained by Gay Waterhouse in Australia and was sold for reported $50 million to Coolmore. Wow. And it didn't quite live up to expectations in Australia. Came third in a big juvenile race. Got some entries at Royal Ascot, so one to keep an eye on this weekend.
You don't spend that kind of cash for a third place horse, do you? I'm going to point you in the direction of the playoff finals at Wembley. I'm expecting three really tight finals. You can be a killjoy like me. At a price of just shy of 3-1, you can back under 2.5 goals for all three finals. So Sheffield United, Sunderland, Charlton, Leyton Orient and Walsall versus Wimbledon. Six pretty tight defences. A couple of stats, 10 of the last 12 championship finals, under 2.5. 5 of the last 8 in League One, unders. And 7 of the last 11 League Two finals have also finished under 2.5. So that's a little cheeky acca for you.
I know, Clarky, as well, you love a bet builder. So if you are looking for one on the Championship playoff final, under 2.5 goals is 8-15 in that. So if you want to chuck that into your bet builder, that looks a pretty good way to go, given that only two of the last Championship playoff finals have featured more than 2.5 goals.
Absolutely. Where are you taking us then?
The Champions Cup. Mm. The Champions Cup final in the rugby. So Northampton take on Bordeaux. And it's nice to see two different teams in here. Mm. Northampton have only won this competition once since 2000. Bordeaux have never won it. So yeah, we're moving away from kind of the usual suspects. Yeah. Northampton come into here as the outsiders, 5-2, Bordeaux 1-3, to get the job done. But that underdog tag, they don't mind. They came through a thriller in the semi-finals against Leinster to win 37-34.
In the league. This is echoes of the Europa League.
Exactly, but it won't matter, will it, if they can pull off another shock on Saturday. So that's 2:45 kickoff.
Yeah, that sounds a bit skinny to me. 5-2 for a team that's eighth in the domestic division. But look, we'll see. Ted, what's happening? Anything going on stateside?
I have one of my favorite Premier League bets.
Oh, okay.
At the end of every season, there's goals galore, as long as you avoid the matches that have anything on them. So avoid the Chelsea game, but then pick 4 or 5 of your others and go for over 3 in an accumulator. I used to trade this at the end of the year. I used to trade all these matches at once. It was so much fun. But we could never make the goals high enough on the totals. And so pick 4 or 5 of your favorites, throw them into a bet builder accumulator. Off you go.
Oh, I like that.
Tottenham, Brighton, for example. That just feels like goals. Absolutely. Doesn't it?
So, there's so many good ones there.
We saw Palace Wolves, didn't we? Everyone was a little bit D-mob happy at Selhurst Park. Yeah, no, I think that's an absolutely brilliant shout. Right, let's play the three tenors. Every week on this show, we discuss a trio of sporting events. And at the end of the pod, we all get a tenor each to place with Fitstairs. We'll keep a running league table of our performance throughout the season. I am leading at the moment, but I've got a feeling the leaderboard might be shaken up this time around. I'll kick us off, if you don't mind. Forest. I'm going to back them to beat Chelsea here.
Come on.
It's a nice price. It is a nice price, Henry. I'm looking at it, 11-5. Home side, a match that really, really matters. Forest have got a great record this season against the top eight. I think 3 wins, 2 draws. Only actually lost to Newcastle inside the top eight. And Chelsea, and you know this, Henry, have lost every single away game at the top eight this season. The highest ranked team they've beaten on their travels is Fulham.
And yeah, that Fulham game was the only away game we've won since Spurs in December.
And it would be hilarious if Forest leapfrogged them and they ended up in 7th. And maybe the Conference League next season. Of course, they'd need to lose the final against Betis for that to happen. Right, that's where my tenor is going. Lola, back to you.
I am going to play it safe this week. And I do just want to point out to our listeners that I did have Eze to score any time in the cup final written down. And I actually deleted it mid-show. So
we haven't seen the notes.
You can't rewrite the past. There are no receipts on Google Docs. I know, I might start tracking changes or something. But I'm playing it safe. So I'm going for a double with Field of Gold. Very unlucky in the Newmarket Guineas, running in the Irish Guineas this weekend, 3:40 on Saturday. And that's at odds of 4-5. And I'm throwing in Los Angeles in a double in the 3:05 Tattersalls Gold Cup. And that comes out at odds of 3.3-1. So that's where my tenor's going.
Brilliant, Henry.
Struggling slightly this week to find something, but I've kind of gone with heart overhead, let's say. And I'd love to see Sunderland get promoted. Said last week, massive club. Be brilliant to have them back in the Premier League. They're 11-10 to win the tie against Sheffield United. Sheffield United have actually not gone up through the playoffs in 8 attempts. It's just snagging in the back of my mind. That is 8 is too many for it to be a coincidence.
This is the year where Wembley hoodoos end, though. Newcastle,
well,
Crystal Palace.
We'll see, but yeah, I would absolutely love to see Sunderland get promoted. Two really solid defensive teams. It'll be cagey. Maybe just Sunderland 1-0 will do nicely.
Right, it's time to wrap now. Ted, I've got to thank you so much for stopping by on Fitstairs World of Sport. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been great. All over the place you guys are hitting me. It's been fun. Hopefully I haven't said anything terrible.
We have tested him. This has been an examination, but you've passed it. It's all good. That is all we've got time for on Fitstairs World of Sport. Thanks for listening. If you did enjoy the show, please give us a nice review, or even better, tell a friend. It will help us reach even more people like you who'd enjoy this content. And remember, to subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast, that way you'll never miss an episode. If you want to find out more about Fitstairs or any of the offers that you've heard on the show, just visit fitstairs.com Remember, prices are subject to change. It's 18 plus only. And please gamble responsibly. That was Fitstairs at World of Sport. I'm Adrian Clark. Your producer was Simon Watts in the studio today with the brilliant Ted Knutson, Lola Katz-Roberts and Henry Beasley. Fitstairs World of Sport is a Track Record production. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. See you then.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.